As for those who have been here for a long time already, let's learn. Okay, page 78, beginning of Parshas Vayera. I want to share three ideas. Two from the very beginning of the Parsha, and then one from a little bit towards the end of the Parsha. So the Torah opens with a continuation of the story from last week, in which Avram Avinu performs a bris milah on himself at the age of 99 years old. And the Torah opens with Vayera Elav Hashem be'ilonei Mamre, that Hashem then appears to Avram in Elonei Mamre. And Avram was sitting there at the Pesach HaOel, at the entrance of his tent, in the heat of the day. He lifts up his eyes, and what does he see? Three men are standing over to him, and he runs over to them, and he brings them water and food, and then the whole story begins to unfold, in which they provide the message to him that Sarah's going to have a baby, and that Sodom is going to be destroyed. That all takes place. Rashi notes, so what did Hashem say to Avraham when he appeared to him? The opening phrase of our pasuk is that Hashem appeared to Avraham. So what did he say to him? What was the communication? What was the prophecy that Hashem communicates to Avraham at this time? You see it anywhere? Look carefully, you see it? Okay, that was a trick question. He doesn't say anything. I know, but I wanted you to look at it the way the sages looked. They combed through. They were trying to find it. They didn't find anything. Okay. He doesn't say anything. So what problem does that present? So what does it mean that Hashem appeared to Avram and then he didn't say anything? Usually when we have that all the time. Hashem will appear. Hashem will say something. There's a communication. There's a prophecy. He doesn't say anything. He appears and he does not speak. From here, Rashi derives, which you actually all know, but you didn't realize. Yes, better than that. Why does he come? Speaking with Vakir Cholim, and that's where Chazal get it from. Chazal say that Hashem came to visit Avram. He was Bikur Cholim. Avram was recovering from his bris milah. And where did they get that from? Where did Chazal see that that's why Avram was there? Because he appeared and he didn't say anything. So it must be, what was he doing there? It must be that he'd come to visit the sick, to help heal Avraham. Now, this is not one of our three points, but I just have to mention that is buried in that little lesson is a significant item that says when you go to be Mevakir Chola, when you go to pay a Shiva call, what is important about that event?
Shiva call or showing up?
Both.
Your presence.
Correct. Mm-hmm. You're there. What was said? What words of wisdom did Hashem impart to Avram when he went to visit the sick?
Nothing.
We have no idea what he said. He didn't say anything. He went. He was there.
Shaul b'shlomo. How
are
you doing?
Shaul b'shlomo. How's it going? How are you doing? You're quoting Rashi. Very good. Right? The book of the Shvarcho v'shaul b'shlomo. Now, we don't actually even have the words that he said. He just went to check in on him. And that's a very important little note that Chazal give us in terms of what it means to, you know, to pay a shiva call, to be mevakir chol. It's just that you care enough to show up. That means speak to people who unfortunately have been in that situation. That's, no one's looking for words of wisdom. They're not looking for words of wisdom because nothing to be said. Now every once in a while, something, you know, but like that's not your job of the way. Just be there. In any case, what I want to share with you is as follows: where does this visit take place? Where does Hashem come to see Avram? In the Elonei Mamre, excellent. In the plains of who's Mamre? So Mamre, this is actually the third time his name has been mentioned. He was mentioned twice before in last week's parsha. And Avram lived in the Elonei Mamre, the plains of Mamre. And Mamre, as a person, was actually introduced to us as well. When Lot was taken captive in the war of the four kings and the five kings of last week's Parsha, so someone survived the war and escaped to tell Avraham. And when the Torah described that incident, the Torah described by Avoha Palitz, this person who escaped came, and he found Avram. And where did he find Avram? He found him in the plains of Mamre, where Avram lived, because they were, the Torah then describes that there was a group. If you flip back to page 62, you could just look at it very briefly. On the bottom of page 62, Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, Vayavoa Palitz, this fugitive who escaped the war came and told Avram, And where did Avram live? Where did he find him? In Elonei Mamre. Achi Eshkol v'Achi Aner, who was the brother of Eshkol and of Aner. V'heim, and whether or not they were actual brothers or just using that in the language of colleagues and friends. V'heim Bale Bris Avram. What does that mean? They were Baal Bris. They were
friends,
or Art School here translates it as allies, colleagues. They were a chevra. These group of people, Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre, and Avram lived in the plains of Mamre. And so when the fugitive escaped the war to come tell Avram about what had happened to his nephew Lot, that's where he found him. Okay, now we know Elon Omamre. Now, the Torah then tells us after the Bris Milah, where is Avram's tent that Hashem comes to visit him? Elon Omamre. I ask you the following question, which is really what Rashi asks. That question is, who cares? Who cares? What does it matter to our story where Avram physically was when this appearance happens? Does it change any of the dynamics? If he was in Elonei Mamre in last parsha, where do you think he was in this week's parsha? No. Probably in Elonei Mamre. And guess what? And if he wasn't, okay, so he moved his tent. What difference does it make? So Rashi is very troubled, as are the sages. Why does the Torah go out of its way to tell us where he was? Rashi says something that will blow your mind. Rashi says, it's the second Rashi on the page. Hu shenasan lo etza al hamila. Mamre gave Avraham the advice to go ahead and do the Bris Milah. Lefikach, therefore, nigle olav b'chelko. As a reward that Mamre gave Avram the advice to do the Bris Milah, a reward to that was that Hashem appeared to Avram in Mamre's plot of land, so that when that happened, the Torah highlights where Avram was at the time, because Mamre deserved the reward for the advice on the Milah. Now, Rashi doesn't quote the Medrash in full. The Medrash says that when Hashem appeared at the end of last week's parsha and gave Avram the command of Bris Milah, Avram went to these three, Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre, and said, "You're not going to believe what just happened to me. Hashem came to me and told me I need to perform a Bris Milah, not just on my little babies that I'm going to have." Remember, he was 99 years old. He didn't have any children. Well, he had Yishmael, but he didn't have Yitzchak yet. "But I'm going to do it on myself. What do you think?" And Aner and Eshkol, the Medrash says, in their own way, basically said to him, "You're crazy. You can't do something like that. You're too old. The nations of the world are going to think you're nuts. They're going to attack." They said, "Don't do it." And Mamre said, "Listen, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me. But if the Ribbono Shel'olam, who has taken you, and he went through from here to here, and he managed you to survive until this point, all right, go ahead." And Avram does the Bris Milah, and therefore as a reward to Mamre, who gave the advice to do the Milah, Hashem appears, and we have now forever, in the beginning of Parshas Vayera, where was this exchange that Hashem came to visit him? In Elonei Mamre. And the question, obviously, that you're all thinking is,
why did he have to ask?
Well, they don't, that's not part of the story we're taught in school, that Avram was given a command, and he wasn't sure what to do, so he went to his friends, and he said, "What do you think?" And two said no, and one said, "Yeah." Where is this coming from?
Shows you the need of
that. That Avram asked advice, and that they once said yes, and because he said yes, he gets this reward. Bris Milah is a big deal in Jewish history, you know. That Avram did this is a big deal. Just doesn't seem to, like, we're not familiar with that.
Did he ask advice, or did he just talk to them?
Rashi's languages, Hu shenasan lo etza al hamila, gave him the advice. Now, that's the question. That's the question. So says the Maral, so I'm going to share two approaches of the Maral, both of which I think are supremely insightful. Says the Maral, answer number one, he says, why would Avram bother asking? He says, Avram was actually concerned about how this act would appear that he just did the Bris Milah. But his concern was that people would say he didn't really mean it. He didn't realize what he was doing. He never asked or sought counsel. And if he would have, he would have never done it. And so Avram was so concerned that people would discredit his act, he gathered his buddies and he said, "Did you hear? What do you think I should do?" Not because he really cared what they were going to say. He wanted them, "Give me everything you got. Give me every reason in the world why I shouldn't do this so that I can hear, I can understand, I can contemplate, and then I'm going to do it. And so that if anyone were to say, you did what? Didn't you realize this? Didn't you realize that? He could say, yes, I did. I heard, I thought, I discussed, and I'm doing it anyway. And the Maharal says, you see the same idea at the end of this week's parsha. At the end of this week's parsha, we have the Akedah, the incident in which Hashem commands Avram to offer up his very own son. And Avram takes off the next morning. He loads up his donkey with all the wood and the fire, anything that he needs. And then the pasuk, Vayi Bayom, which day was it that he reaches the place?
Third day.
Third day. Vayi Bayom HaShlish, 3 days. Do you know what it was like for Avram walking together with his son Yitzchak for 3 days? 3 days. So Rashi there asks, also based on Chazal, why did Hashem have to give him a command where he... Get him a little bit closer. Give him the command. Let him wake up in the morning and take care of what he needs to take care of. 3 days, such a long time. Rashi there says the exact same thing, that it shouldn't be that he does such a thing, and it might be that he wasn't of sound mind, that he was bibahala, he was impulsive, he didn't have a chance to really think this through. So for 3 days, Avraham walks alongside of his son, knowing what he's headed to do, so that when he does it, he can say both to himself and to all of the Jewish people forever, this was not an impulsive act. This was not without thought, without consideration. I knew exactly what I was doing. And as such, I did it. So the Maharal says, so Avram, in the beginning of the parasha, did the same thing on his own, that it shouldn't be that anyone could say that. See, he asked his buddies so there could be a conversation. He could hear all their arguments and he said, I'm doing it anyway. That's answer number one. Then the Maharal says another answer. How did the Torah, we look quickly back from last week's parsha, how did the Torah describe this group of Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre?
Balbris.
Says Maharal, you know what it means to be a Balbris? To be a colleague, an ally, chevra. So it means that a person doesn't do something without telling his chevra first. You just don't do it. Imagine a husband comes home and he says, I quit my job today. And his wife says, You did what? He said, I'm not happy. I don't like my job. So she could say, I understand. You didn't tell me? We didn't speak about it? Now maybe you would have done it anyway. The fact that you would do something without telling me is offensive. Just that, whether we... He said, we're financially fine. I'm not worried about the finances. I'm worried about our relationship, that you would do something so big and not feel that it was appropriate or made sense to share it with me. That's what I'm worried about. Says the Maharal, so Avram was given this major tzivui. Bris Mila 99 is crazy. He said to himself, I'm going to do something like this and not tell my friends? And he uses amazing language. He says, Lo shu chayiv l'shmo alahem. You don't have to listen. If his wife would say, you can't do that, that's crazy. I don't have to listen just because you think it's a bad idea. I just have to tell you. I have to share information. And we've all, you know, experienced in life when somebody close to us does something and you get that sense of, you didn't say anything? You didn't tell me? That's offensive. Because that tells me we're not as close as I thought we were. Because if we were, what's that? So I don't know for sure because the Torah doesn't record whether he did or whether he didn't. I don't know. I don't know if the Medrash recorded it. I'm not familiar with it. 100%. 100%. That this is the second approach of the Maharal. The reason why. So it's both answers. He's not asking advice because I wasn't sure what to do. It wasn't a matter of I should or shouldn't do it. It's that I have to tell you. I have to tell you what I was about to do because we're too close not to.
I don't think he told Sarah because Sarah, when she heard...
That's the Akedah. That's the Akedah.
That's the Akedah. So he didn't tell... okay.
The Akedah, he for sure did not tell. That's for sure. That's clear.
But in the text, in the Torah, when it talks about the bris, Abraham's bris...
Yeah.
Where did they get this idea that he consulted? Like, that's, you know, it sounds like he was told to circumcise and he goes straight to circumcise. He doesn't. So where did they get this...
Where is the Medrash? I didn't read the Medrash inside. Where are the Medrash? So I don't know. That's where. So Rashi pointed out from the fact that it was told here, whether or not it's just from the fact that. No, it's from Rashi tells us that Hashem revealed Himself in Eil and Mamre, but it could be that they saw it from somewhere else as well.
So
that I can't. That I can't tell you. Then again, so that's what the Maral says on why it was revealed in the chelek of Mamre. Very interesting thing. Now, back to the first pasuk. What's Avram doing at the entrance of his tent? Okay, so two things. Well, that's what Chazal said. On the simple meaning of the pasuk, what was he doing? Yoshev. He was sitting there. Yoshev. What's the appropriate way to spell the Hebrew word Yoshev? So it should have been spelled with a yud, then a vav, and a shin bet. Yoshev. That's how it's spelled in its full normal. How is it spelled actually here in the Chumash?
Without the vav.
Now, if I were to show you in a vacuum just those three letters, yud, shin, bet, and say, what does that word read? How does it read? Yoshav. That's how you would say it. Pat, like Yoshav, he sat down. Yoshev means he was sitting down. Yoshav meant he sat sitting down. Who Yoshav? He sat down. Rashi points out, when you have an interesting, when the word is pronounced one way, who Yoshev, he was sitting, but it's read as if he sat down now. That's how it looks because of its misspelling. So Rashi points out, Bikesh Lamod. What was Avram doing at first? He was standing or sitting before Hashem appeared?
Sitting.
How do you know he was sitting? Based on the storyline? Just out of his meal. He's 99 years old. We could assume he was sitting down. That's exactly right. He was sitting and he was recovering. Hashem came to be Mevaker Chola. We could assume he was not well. It was a difficult surgical procedure. He was sitting. Yet, the verse looks the way, because of the missing Vav, as if he just sat down right now. So Rashi says, Bikesh la'amod, because Avram wanted to stand up. Meaning, yes, he was sitting. Hashem appears, and Avram tries to get up. It's appropriate. Hashem just appeared. And Hashem says, Shev, you sit down. So that the word conveys both that he was originally sitting, and that he was told now to sit. Why is it so relevant that we know that Avram tried to stand up, and Hashem sat him back down? Rashi writes, Atosimon levanecha. You're going to be a sign for all your future generations. You sit, I'm going to stand. She'asid ani lehisyatzev ba'adas hadayonim. I will stand, Hashem says, I will stand in the presence of the judges. V'hein yoshvin, while they sit. They sit in judgment. I'm going to stand while they sit. Therefore, we're going to play that out right now. You sit, Maisa Ava Simon Labanim, that which takes place. So the Avos is always a sign what's going to take place. You sit, I'll stand. So, says Rashi, this is what's taking place right here at the recovery of the Bris Milah. Hashem appears, Avram wants to stand. Hashem says, you sit. This, I like the way this looks. This is right. You sitting, me standing, because in future generations, when the judges are going to sit in judgment, they're going to sit as the judges, and I'm going to stand. Asks the Maral, that doesn't make any sense. Hashem standing?
Yeah. Why
Hashem should stand in the presence of the judges? Who stands in the presence of judges? Who should stand? When there are judges sitting down, who stands?
The litigants,
right? The people being judged. Why should Hashem say, like, no, this feels right. I'm going to stand in the presence of the judges. Doesn't feel right at all, says the Maral. In here, this little one letter that's missing, which creates this entire thought, is actually one of the connections, the deep connections and powerful relationship that we have to Torah. And it goes as follows, says the Maral. Hamishpat le'lokim hu. The mishpat, the actual laws, are all le'lokim. They belong to Hashem. It's His Torah. V'hu masar l'dayanim. Hashem gave over that Torah to the judges, lihi amin o lihi samil, to go to the right or to the left. Meaning, Torah Shebichtav, the written word, is immutable. It is exactly as it is, letter by letter, letter by letter, the whole way through, from start to finish. Bereishis to Kol Yisrael. Torah Shebal Peh, the oral law that Hashem gave us, is a dynamic, living organism that as every generation goes, every generation's Rabbanim have to paskin, deal with new shilas, understand, apply the rules. It is, every year, thousands of new svarim printed. What's the power, the relationship that the Jew has as a people, represented by the Dayanim, to the oral law? So it's reflected in a number of different areas in terms of the fact that it was given to us. One of which is in the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, the mitzvah of sanctifying the new moon, which happens to be, as we spoke about the very first Rashi in Chumash, the first mitzvah given to the entirety of the Jewish people when we became a nation, leaving Mitzrayim, the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh. How does that mitzvah work? The mitzvah is now the calendar is set because of all of the difficulties we've had in Jewish history. But when the way it's supposed to be done is when two witnesses see the new moon, they travel to Yerushalayim, they testify in front of the court, we saw the new moon, it's Rosh Chodesh. The court, the Sanhedrin in Yerushalayim, declares Mekudosh, it's sanctified, and that becomes Rosh Chodesh. That's how it's supposed to work. What if Basin makes a mistake? What if the Sanhedrin declares the wrong day to be Rosh Chodesh, meaning the witnesses saw the new moon, and they come, and for whatever reason, the Sanhedrin, when they're grilling the witnesses to make sure that they're valid, they decide that they're not valid, and they throw them out so that they're not valid witnesses. And meanwhile, they saw, but for whatever reason, something didn't go right, and instead of the day that should have been, the following day was declared to be Rosh Chodesh. They made a mistake. It's clear on all reality, objective realities, what should have been, and they made a mistake. Which day is Rosh Chodesh? The day that they mistakenly declared or the day that should have been? The day that they declared is exactly correct. Says the Gemara. The Gemara is a drasha on the pasuk that we say all the time on the Yom Tovim. Eile Moadei Hashem. These are my Moadim. These are my holidays. Asher Tikru'u Osam B'moyadam. That you will call Osam them in their right time. The word Osam is also there misspelled without a vav, as if it could be read Atem, asher tikru'u atem, that you will call it. The Gemara says, whenever you call it is when it is. And then the Gemara says, spells it out, atem, when you call it, afilu mezidim, even if you declare it wrong on purpose, bemezid. And you say, we can't have Rosh Chodesh be on this day, that's going to be a mess, it's going to make this happen or that happen, or Pesach is going to fall out on a Thursday night, we can't do it. We need it to be, you can declare it whenever you declare it, it is. If you made a mistake, it doesn't matter. When you declare it, it is Rosh Chodesh. Now, that might seem like a small, little, minor halacha, but it's actually quite significant because what happens when we declare Rosh Chodesh? All the Yom Tov, all the sanctity of time is built on when the human courts decide to declare Rosh Chodesh. Even more than that, and I've brought this example many times, I apologize for repeating it. If you were to have a window into the heavenly discussions up 4 days before Rosh Hashanah, and the Malachim would say, oh, we're busy preparing, it's a big day, Rosh Hashanah, you're going to judge the entire world. Tell us, Ribbono Shel Olam, and they would say, which day are you going to sit in judgment and judge the people? Mi yichyeh, mi yamus, who will live and who will die, who by fire, who by water? When is it happening? And Hashem would answer them, I don't know, he would say. I don't know. Angels would say, what do you mean you don't know?
Whenever Rosh Chodesh.
And he would say, whenever they declare Rosh Chodesh. It might be on Tuesday next week. It might be on Wednesday. They might even push it off to Thursday. I don't know. And the angels would say, you're the judge. You're judging them. And you're waiting for them to tell you when to judge? Say, uh-huh. That's exactly right. That is a supremely powerful concept in which Hashem handed over a certain authority over the laws, Ki Hamishpat LeElokim, even though the laws are Hashem's, into our hands. Now, the Ritva, one of the Rishonim, describes, there's a concept the Gemara says many, many times when it discusses debate. Many, many debates in the Gemara, many disputes, two opinions, Beishama, Beisil, we can go through a ton, Beish Lakish, Rav Yochanan, we have tons of them. So the Gemara often says, who's right? So the Gemara uses a phrase, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. These and these are both the words of the living God. They're both the words of the living God. Now, we can't paskin both, we can't act upon both, but they're both valid, they're both perspectives of Torah, and we have to choose which one to act upon. When the Ritva expresses what that means, when Hashem says two opposites, Elu ve'elu, they could both be divrei Elokim chayim, he expresses it as follows. He paints the picture of Moshe going up to Har Sinai to receive the Torah. And while he's sitting there learning with the Ribbono Shel Olam, he comes across a certain Shaila. He's not sure if this should be permissible or forbidden. Is it mutter or aser? So he asks the Ribbono Shel Olam, and he says, well, what about this kind of case? And the Ritva describes that Hashem gives him 49 reasons why you should say that it's permissible. And he explains it like this, that, all these reasons why it should for sure be permissible. Moshe says, Shkoyach, thank you very much. He turns around to go tell the people, it's mutter, it's permissible. And before he turns around, Hashem says, wait. I just forgot one thing. And then he gives him 49 reasons why you can argue that it's forbidden, that it's aser. And he finishes all the arguments. And Moshe scratches his head, says the Ritva, and says to Ribbono Shel Olam, what should I do now? You just gave me 49 valid reasons to say that it's okay. You just gave me 49 reasons to say that it's not okay. What should I tell the people? What's the law? What's the halacha? They can or they can't. And on that, the Ritva says, is the pshat. That's what it means. Elu ve'yad. The Ribbono Shel Olam can see it going this way, can see it going that way. Every generation's judges will paskin kefi ro'os eneim, according to the way their eyes see it. What makes sense to them? That's how they're going to paskin. And it could be in one generation they paskin this way, in another generation they paskin a different way. But they're valid approaches. We've discussed many times on different floors of a building, looking out, and there are many different perspectives on something that's significant. And everyone, who decides? We decide. We're going to decide what the halacha is going to be. One last episode where the Gemara records something like this is an oft-quoted Gemara, Maseches Bava Metzia, where there's a machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. They were arguing about a certain oven, if it was tameh, if it was tar, if it was ritually pure, impure, and they're going on and on in their debate. And Rabbi Eliezer finally says, I know I'm right. And I'm so positive that I'm right, this tree is going to prove that I'm right. And the tree uprooted itself and moved all the way across the field. And the Chachamim said, that's a really nice trick that you did, but we don't really care about trees. Trees don't have smicha. They're not rabbis. We don't listen to trees. So Rabbi said, I know I'm right. He said, this river is going to prove that I'm right. And the river that was flowing in one direction, all of a sudden, miraculously started flowing in the other direction. And the Chachamim said, ooh, wah, nice. We don't care about rivers. We don't listen to rivers. We disagree with you. And then Rabbi Eliezer said, I know I'm right. The walls of the Beis Medrash are going to prove that I'm right. The walls begin caving in. And then the Gemara said, they only stop from caving in as an honor to the Chachamim. And they said, we don't care about the walls. It's irrelevant. And then finally, a heavenly voice, a bas kol, comes out and says, what are you guys arguing with Rabbi Eliezer? Everything that he says is right. And the Chachamim said, lo bashamayim. It's not heaven anymore. You gave us the Torah. We don't care about your bas kol. We don't care about your river. We don't care about your tree. We see it differently. Says the Gemara, what's Hashem doing up in Shemayim at the time? Said the Ribbono Shel Olam was laughing and saying, Nitzchuni banai, my children have defeated me. I would have said this way. They saw that. That's the halacha. Chacham and Paskind, based on whatever the dispute there was. That's koach. To be able to say, you gave us the law, and now we need to figure it out, interpret it, apply it, as we see fit. Lo bashamayim, it's not in heaven anymore. That really underlies why, when Moshe goes up to Shemayim, the Gemara records that the malachim, the angels, tried to stop him from getting the Torah. There's a whole dialogue. Hashem says to Moshe, Nu, what are you going to say? The angels were saying, you're just a little person, a human being, born of woman. You're going to die. You're going to get the Torah. Nu, Moshe, whatever. And Moshe has all of his reasons. He says, were you guys in Mitzrayim up here in heaven? Do you have parents? Do you have to be honest in business? The whole dialogue is perplexing. But what was driving the angels from saying, no, don't give it to them? There's something that was given to us more than just keep Shabbos and keep kosher. We were given the keys to this powerful gift, this godly divine gift. We are going to paskin as we see fit. Every generation's judges are going to paskin the shilas. They're going to decide. They're going to decide when it's Rosh Chodesh. They're going to decide when it's Pesach. They're going to decide when the Ribbono Shel Olam himself sits in judgment. Says the Maral, when someone is dependent on someone else, which one stands and which one sits? Person who's dependent on the other one stands and waits to hear what the other person is going to decide. To a real extent, the Ribbono Shel Olam, I couldn't even say this if it wouldn't have been for the fact that I'm just reading you the Maral's words. HaKadosh Baruch Hu kaviyochol tole bidayanim. Hashem himself, so to speak, is dependent on the judges. Shaharei mishpato biyadam. His mishpat The application of his law is now in
their hands.
Umishu tole ba'acher, and the one who's dependent on someone else, yesh lo la'amod. And therefore, Hashem says to Avram, you sit, I'll stand. Because in future generations, this looks right. The judges will sit, and I will stand. Says Maral, why now? Because Avram just got the bris milah. Bris milah is a covenant. Now we have a pact. We have a relationship in which Avram says, I and all of my generations after me will perform bris milah, representing all that comes along with it. And Hashem says, I'm also giving something. I am giving you my Torah. And I'm not just giving it to you in a Torah Shebichtav form of copy it letter by letter for every generation. I'm giving you an Torah Shebal Peh that's going to be dynamic. That's going to have to apply it to every new generation, every new question that comes up. And it's going to be in your hands to make those decisions. And I am, so to speak, going to stand while you sit. And here, at the moment of Bris Milah, as Avram is recovering from his Bris Milah, Hashem says, this is the way it needs to be. I am going to stand while you carried out this Bris Milah, while you sit, and va'ata siman levanecha, you will be an eternal sign to your children as to how that's going to go. That is a massive, it's hinted at this one missing vav. But the ideas from all those Gemaras that we just quoted, in terms of the dynamic, the relationship that we have, and Kaviyachal, you can't almost say those words, that Hashem is dependent on the decisions of the Dayanim. Okay, I think the third, we got to at least two of the ideas we wanted to get to. For those of you who have been here for a very long time already,